This is 4:55 on Friday, September 18th. So I don't know if you notice here, but if you see me click on the little red thing, that means I started That means I started recording. If you don't see that, it means I didn't. So somebody say something. another way to make sure it actually happens. All right. Good morning. So I thought we're now at a stage where we need to go over sort of at the clicks level just some very basic stuff. And so we'll start with some clicks questions this morning on... on the order of operations, do I need to turn off this front bank of lights in order for people to see, or is it okay? Can you see the screen from the back?
Sort of.
Well, I could turn off the lights.
What?
But you should be seeing it on your own screen, so. Right. The client side, remember, client side doesn't involve listening and accepting. That's server side. So the correct answer. So most people paid attention to my admonition about this. Let's see if we do any better on the next one.
Glad I changed my answer.
What's that?
So I'm glad I changed my answer.
How about the server side? Okay, server side does not involve any connecting. That's a client side only thing. And then the question becomes between A and D, which is the right order of things. Listening has got to be before accepting. So that's one way to pick out the difference between those two. So you got to know those. Right? That's the point of this. Yes.
On that one, does it receive before it sends?
Good question. Doesn't it receive before it sends? That one depends. Okay. Right? That depends on the actual application protocol. Those two could be in either order, depending on whether the server sends kind of a welcome message or not. In the project you're going to be doing, the server is going to send first. After the accept,
right? Yes.
Right. The server is going to send. So let's see protocols. So in HTTP, the server remains silent until the client sends something. In SMTP and Telnet, the server sends first.
Okay.
Okay? So, good question. Absolutely. All right, we're getting a little more sophisticated here.
Server code sends and receives on the socket returned by the socket system call.
You,
which somebody who answered false, what were you thinking? Yes. No, socket is a system call. Okay. Somebody else who there were six people who answered false. Somebody else who answered false have an opinion about why?
Except returns a new socket.
Except is the one that returns the socket that's used for communication by the server. The socket that's returned by socket in the server is the one that gets turned into the listening socket, right? Which gets passed to except, and then except returns the socket that's actually used for communication. All right? So false is indeed the correct answer for this. It fooled you, right? You gotta.
So, yeah. Good. Next. Well, we'll skip that one since we already answered it. This one. This is one of those freeform answer ones. Which system call returns the socket used by the client code for send and receive? So I've seen socket, I've seen connect, I've seen accept, I've seen not sure, that's okay, bind, alright. So first of all, get clear in your mind which ones are the which ones are the server side calls and which ones are the client side calls. So accept and listen and bind are all only on the server side. So that they can't be the answer to this question. Socket and connect are both plausible in that they're both used on the client side. But connect is something that just returns success or failure. It doesn't return a file descriptor. So it's the socket that's created by socket on the client side that is used for the communication, that is for the send and receive. All right, now this one, this next one, is one we haven't explicitly talked about. You're going to have to think about this one, and I'm going to encourage you to talk with your neighbors about this one before you answer. Which socket-related system calls return immediately? That is, without waiting for something else to happen in the world. Okay, so you can talk with your neighbors about this one, because we haven't discussed this, but if you think about it, you can answer this correctly. Okay. Everybody should go ahead and answer, even if you worked in your groups, because that lets me know that everybody's done. All right. Close enough. Let's take a look. Wrong mouse. All right. Well, let's start with C. Looks like everybody ruled out C. On what basis did you rule out C? What was the reason that C has something that doesn't return immediately? Yes.
Well, we said because it includes listen.
Because it includes listen.
Something that occurs over a massive amount of time.
Okay. So in fact, listen is a system call that returns immediately.
Okay.
Listen is the thing that says to the operating system, I'm ready for people to be able to attempt to connect to me. But at the point at which I wait in the server is actually what?
Accept.
Accept, right? That's the place that the server waits. Okay. And that makes sense, right? Because accept is going to be the thing that returns the socket that connects to that the client connects has connected to and tells you the client's address, right? Listen just takes this argument that says how many things am I willing to have waiting for me to be ready to serve them. So listen returns immediately. All right. Yes. What's that?
What does accept do again?
Accept is the server-side call that waits for a client to connect, right? And once the client has connected, it returns a new socket for talking to that client along with the client's address in one of the parameters. Okay, so given that listen returns immediately, what else? Let's see. People ruled out B largely. Well, we now know that accept is not going to return immediately, so we can rule out B and C. So that gives us A or D. No, A or C. A or C. Returning immediately. What do we know about socket? You make a system call on socket, you get back a file descriptor immediately. No need to wait. How about bind? Bind just associates a port number with the socket. Okay? So there's no need to wait for anything there. That's immediate. And we already talked about listen. So A is the set that returns immediately. things listed there. The things that wait are accept. We already talked about that. And what's the other one that takes an amount of time? Connect, right? Because for connect, the packet has to go out across the network to the server. That's the first interaction that takes place across the network. So that one takes a while. Okay, good. All right.
So is connect just wait because you're just waiting on a response from the server?
Because you're waiting on a response from the server. Yeah.
Really, it takes the round trip time plus whatever time the server takes to respond. Okay. All right. I want to go back to the stuff that we did last time because it seemed so shaky.
In your understanding. So this is an example of a line you might see in a dump of memory. I don't know if you remember these from 260, but they typically have the address of the first byte at the beginning and then the bytes that make up the thing starting with that address. So at address hex 1000, we have bytes 0, 0, 0, 0, blah, 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 FF, FE, 1020, etc. Okay. So the question is, what is the question? On a little endian architecture machine, what is the numerical value of the 2-byte unsigned integer starting at address hex 1008 and write it as a sum of powers of 256?
And you don't have to convert the hex bytes, just write them as hex.
You want to discuss this in your groups? I think that might be a good idea, given the rate at which answers are not pouring in. Go ahead and talk about it.
The answers are still not pouring in,
so let's let's dive into this a little bit more. First of all, where is address hex 1008? Which, what byte is stored at that address? It's been too long. Well, okay. So each byte is 2 hex digits, right? So that's address 0, that's address 1000, 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004, 6, 7, 8. All right? So there's the byte at address hex 1008. And we're treating it as a 2-byte unsigned integer. So how does that work on a little endian machine? It's FF times 256 to the 0
plus Fe times 256 to the first power. That's what it means to be a little endian machine.
Okay, well, I'm not going to wait for everybody to type that in because I just told you what it should be, but we'll go on to the next one. So you understand what I'm asking for on that? You don't understand what
I
I'm asking.
I don't really understand the question. So,
okay.
I don't understand how you got to each iteration of addresses was two 16-bit characters.
Let me go back. Let me activate that again so we can see that. So,
a byte is
8 bits.
8 bits,
yeah.
And therefore, each hex digit is what? 4 bits. A hex digit is 4 bits.
Oh, okay.
Right? So 2 hex digits make up a byte.
Okay.
Okay?
That's fair.
Two people have said they're lost. Do you want to say something about that?
Kind of in the same sense the way you just said.
In the same are you okay now that I've explained it? Good. All right. So let's go on to the next one.
Are these clicks answers, are these saved on the website?
The answer, I don't think I put through in this file. The questions are on the website, yeah. Similar thing, different values in memory, but at the same address.
On a big endian architecture machine, is the 2-byte signed integer value with address 1008 positive or negative? Treated as signed this time. Go ahead and talk. No. You didn't break the rule, but the reasoning is not right. So, we got to talk about that. All right, let's see what we got. Stop saying that. Not right. We'll get to that. Okay, but let's do the other part first. What I'm going to talk about. All right. So it's a big endian machine. It starts at the same place, right? There's 1008. This is the high order byte, and the typical signed representation says if the high order bit is 1, then it will be negative.
Right?
So that is indeed negative. Now, I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Justin.
Yeah. So Justin says, well, it doesn't matter because the one at the other there's the one at the other end. But remember, this byte is not treated in little endian fashion. Within the byte.
Oh, that said the binary has a 1 on
the
both
binary
ends.
Has 1 at both ends. But if you look at this, in a little endian machine, this would be 1 times 2 to the 56 plus Fe times
2 to the... Sorry. Let me say that again. This would be 1 times 256 plus FE times... One, right? Okay? This O1 does not have a 1 at the left end.
That's not what I was saying. I was saying the binary that I heard
has
1 on both sides.
But that does not make it in, on a little endian machine. This is a positive.
Negative.
This is a positive. This is a positive.
Right. This is a big endian. So it is negative.
Can we draw this out?
Can we draw it? Okay.
No,
if the number were O1FE,
then it would be a different number.
I don't see where you're coming from.
But let's draw this out. Alt F2.
I mean, it's still negative, right?
it is indeed negative. I'm not buying the reasoning. Oh, this is a Windows machine. I can't do that. Okay, so FE is 11111110 in binary, and O1 is 0000001. Okay. On a big endian machine, this is the high order byte,
right,
and this is the low order byte.
Right.
Okay.
And it is a one.
And it's one, right?
Okay.
It's a one on both ends. You are right about that, but I think the other is not. Okay.
Right.
So this is FE times 256 plus 1 times 1.
I see what you're saying now. If you switch it to little endian, the other one would be first.
Yeah.
Then it would be positive.
Then it would be
positive.
Okay, I agree.
Okay. And, fine. All right. Okay. On a little endian machine, this is big endian. On a little endian machine, this is 1 times 256 plus FE times 1.
Okay. And I'd rather you try to think about it like that than other tricks about ones at both ends or something.
Okay? We good? We're good. No more answers.
An address 100C on a little endian machine is the four byte integer at that address, positive or negative. Go ahead and talk if you want.
Yeah,
you really don't have to go quite that far.
It makes more sense in my brain, though.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, where does that address start? Let's join together and figure this out. So how do you figure out where that address is?
You have to count, just count, right? Here's 0 at 1001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, A, B, I miss. This is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, A, B, C. All right? Okay?
Or I can see that.
So C is 12, but if you don't know that, just count. So here we are. We're at this position. It's a little endian machine, which means that the most significant byte is not this one, but this one. Right? EFB. Oh, sorry. It's little endian. This is a little endian machine.
Right. So
on a little endian machine, the most significant byte is the one at the right end of the byte, at the higher address. Okay? And its value is FE. Okay? So let's write it out.
You're confused now. We'll get to that. We better get to that. Okay, so for this one, it's FE 01 02 01. All right? Those, and now expand that into bits.
And if the high order bit is 1, it's negative. Okay? Well, F is 1111, so it's negative.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So now I'm really confused, somebody said. Who was that? You did.
Yes, I see.
You see. You don't. You see? You don't see.
Kind of
see.
So then you took the FE and basically you just put it at the front because that's how we're going to.
That's how we're going to string out the bits into the 32-bit number.
So we're starting at the 0102.
We're starting here.
And then we just take
and I take those four bytes and I write them in the reverse order. Oh. FE 01.
But then on the previous example, right on the left side, we stop at FE and then we only wrap FE at 01.
That was a big endian machine.
Yeah.
No, that was two
okay,
bytes.
Okay, I got it.
You can, okay, Diane, explain.
Yeah.
Oh,
because
okay.
For the same thing that I thought.
So this is really good.
Yeah.
So you got to read the question, right?
Well,
the
last two we did were two.
The last two, guys. Sometimes they are 2 bytes, and sometimes they're 4 bytes.
Okay.
So you got to read the question.
Thought it was the same question.
Thought it was the same question.
It's in the same spirit.
It's
right?
In the same
so
spirit, but
you've
got to read the question. All right. Okay, so what I'm getting here is that quite a few people need to haul out their 260 stuff and do what?
What's 260?
Or 234.
There you go.
Or 234. Computer Science 260, EE 234. You got to haul that out and get... and reacquaint yourself with this stuff. Okay? I mean, I think I've covered...
Be sharp, you just do what you want.
I think I've covered the essentials on this stuff, but I think there's a lot of rusty neurons about this. So,
a little bit investigation on your parts would be warranted. Well, that took longer than I expected, but that's okay because it's important stuff.
When you're done, we haven't talked about the last system call that's involved here. Close, just like for our file descriptor. No harm done if your process exits without doing close, because part of process exiting is to do close. So that's fine. But the good programming practice says close the socket when you're done with it. If you don't get in a habit of doing that, then later when we have programs that last a long time, they will keep opening sockets, and eventually you'll run out of sockets, and then your program will crash for no good reason. So close your sockets.
Okay, so
now we're going to get into a little bit about the application protocols and how we get messages out of byte streams. So remember, as far as TCP is concerned, all we have is a stream of bytes, one after the other. Doesn't worry about them at all. The boundaries between sends don't mean anything. The boundaries between receives don't mean anything. We've got a stream of bytes. And so it's up to the application to figure out where the boundaries are between the pieces of their protocol, and so the protocol has to be designed to allow that to happen.
TCP just cares about the order, right?
The order of the bytes. They go in at one end, they come out in the same order without any missing at the other end. That's all. That's all we know. Okay, so of course, the computer programs have things that are more than just arrays of bytes. We have things like integers and strings and structs and all kinds of things. And so we have to make messages out of those within the byte stream. And we're going to talk about strings as our first way of doing things. And in the assignment, the programming project, this is sort of precisely what you're going to do. We have two ways of going about things, really, for strings. We can either say that we'll send the string, the characters of the string, and then some delimiter at the end that says that's the end of the string. Or we can send something at the beginning that says how many characters we're going to send. Both of them are used. Right? The HTTP protocol uses the delimiter version. I think the DNS protocol uses the length version. Okay. People do both.
What would be the delimiter? What would be a good delimiter for that?
Okay. Well, this is actually quite interesting. The convention for a lot of protocols is that the delimiter is a newline character. Okay? Not the null character that you're used to using for C strings. So one of the tricks in the assignment, which I guess we're probably not going to get to talk much today, but that's all right because I only promised it for Monday anyway. One of the tricks in the assignment is to make sure that you understand that when you're going back and forth between C strings and strings in your application protocol, you have to use a different delimiter. And you don't include the null character, you include the newline character. Now, one of the consequences of that is that when you're dealing with delimited strings, you can't use functions like strlen and strcopy on them because there's no terminator. And that's what those C functions rely on. So it gets a little tricky. And part of the deal with this assignment is to deal with that trickiness. Okay. Similarly, if they have lengths in front of them, they still also don't have null terminators on them. So you've got to program knowing that that's the data representation. The stuff up here, is intended to show the sending of what are called Unicode strings, which are strings that are made up of multiple bytes per character in order to represent all the different languages of the world. So in if we're sending Unicode here and sending English characters, they're going to take up 2 bytes each. Right? The length of the string is still only 3, but now it takes up 6 bytes.
3 Unicode characters,
whereas here it takes up 6 bytes. Okay? So, right. All complications of dealing with real stuff. Okay, how about encoding integers? Well, you can encode integers as character strings, right? You know, when we think of the number 2015, we can think of it as a number, or we can think of it as essentially the string 2015. So some protocols are designed so that numbers are sent 2015. And others are designed so that we send the actual binary representation of 2015. So here's an example of sending it as a string of characters encoding divisions. What protocol have we seen that has numbers encoded this way? We haven't seen all that many protocols. HTTP, right? In HTTP, everything is sent as characters, and so, like, the content length field is going to be something that's expressed as the character representation of the decimal number that is the content length. So, the advantage of the advantage of sending them this way is that they can be arbitrarily big, and you can look at them with your eyeballs and see what they mean. But they take up a lot more space that way, and you can't directly do computation with them. So, how about this? We get our big and little endian stuff as the issue here again. Remember, we dealt with it before. In terms of port numbers and things like that. Now we're talking about it in terms of data that actually goes over the wire. But it's the same issue. And notice that you have to have as part of the definition of the protocol not only whether it's going to be big endian or little endian, normally big endian for networking, but also how many bytes there are going to be in those numbers. Otherwise, the two ends don't agree. And so for the assignment, I've said that you're going to send 2 byte lengths for your strings. Okay, so 4 byte. So messages end up having multiple pieces to them. Where are the boundaries? You can say they're fixed length things. So if you need to send an integer, a 4 byte integer, and 2 2 byte integers, you could just say that's what it is. Both sides agree, and that's how you find the boundaries. Or you could go back to the delimiter idea. Either way.
People do all of these things. All right.
Now, suppose... Now, this is getting a little bit esoteric, perhaps, for the beginning, but I'll just mention it. Suppose you have a struct in C. It's got some bytes in it, laid out in memory in a certain way. Suppose you just take the address of that struct and send it, and say send, beginning at the address of that inside. Right? So the bytes, in whatever layout they are here, will get sent over the wire. The problem is that different compilers may have different ideas about how this structure gets laid out in memory. Some compilers for some architectures, may put in some padding between a short and an int in order to get the alignment of the int to be a mod 4 address. Right, because then the machine works better. It's faster if things are aligned on their natural boundaries. Other languages or compilers may not do that. So this becomes an issue when you're starting to do complicated things because you have big data structures you want to send, and you need to say as part of the protocol what the rules are about exactly what is going to come at you over the wire. You can't just say it's this, right? Because this may be different on different machines. So that leads to the idea of what we call marshaling or serializing, where the part of the protocol says, yes, these are the data that I'm sending, but I'm going to send them in a very specific format over the wire. And then the party at the other end will deserialize them into what their version of this layout is. This is probably stuff that we won't get too much. And that's the end of the Calvert and Donahue slides for now. We'll come back to them later when we talk about concurrent servers and so on. But for now, that's all we're going to do. So on Monday, let's see. First of all, thank you all for filling out the survey and providing your comments about that. That's great. I think I owe one person a redo of it. They made a mistake, so I will reply to your email with instructions about that. The survey closes tomorrow at midnight, so please do it before that so that I can assign you to teams on Sunday. And then on Monday, we'll have the teams and we'll talk about the assignment. Any questions about all of this? No takers? Well, have a great weekend and go Hoos!
One moment, please. Let me.